on you smiling. The whole world smiles with you, baby. Oh, when you laughing, babe, when you laughing, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, bring on the rain, don't stop your sighing. Be happy again and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles.
This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC, a monthly show devoted to the creative life. My guest this month is Gloria Garfinkel, a New York artist who is 85 years old, but as my friend Arthur Tress used to say, you are as young as your work, and her work is very young and fresh indeed. She is having a major show at the Smith Museum in Springfield, Massachusetts through the end of April. Gloria and her husband have had a house in Greene County for the last 45 years. The music you just heard was Louis Armstrong in a 1929 recording of When You're Smiling, the year Gloria was born. After the interview, a performance described on YouTube as stratospheric, Beverly Sills performing Schubert's Shepherd on a Rock. So here is Gloria.
Thanks to Wendy McNerris. We are here at her gallery on Warren Street. I'm with Gloria Garfinkel, an artist who's having a show right now at the Springfield Museums.
That's right.
And welcome, Gloria.
Thank you.
And how long will that show be up?
It will be up until next April.
And how did you come to have this exhibition?
I've had a number of exhibitions this year, sort of middle America. And each one found out about it and wanted to have it. This museum has an exhibition on origami, the folded paper.
Of course, yes.
And thankfully, the museum said, oh, wait a minute now, we know somebody who does paintings and sculptures and prints, and they're not about so much origami as it is the types of work that are inspired by Japanese artwork. And so we're together now. The origami, which I love and I cannot do because it takes a lot of skill and it's difficult. And while I love it, I'm not interested in really learning how to do it. I want to admire it, something that somebody else does.
When did you begin to have this interest in origami or in Japanese art in general?
In general, I think I've always had. But I was coming out of the museum, Metropolitan, walking through the shop because I was looking for a special book. And you know how your eye just, as you come in someplace, it just goes around and it picks out this and it picks out that. Well, there was a whole rack of postcards. And I thought, oh, wait a minute, I need to get some postcards to send to my friends who don't live in New York. And I found this one of a woodcut done by Hiroshige. But the front of the card, which we consider the front, is a photograph of a print, was of chrysanthemums, delicate and elegant, and the inner shape of the rectangle was the fan shape. On top of that were blue and white stripes. Stripes are very strong in Japanese art, but I had never ever seen blue and white. I've seen brown and white, green and white, sort of ecru and white. And so I bought it, and I said to myself, this could be something, but I don't know what. And I put it in the drawer and forgot about it. And then one day I was working on something. I wanted to be a 6-foot circle, a canvas. And I said, wait a minute now. And I went and I pulled out this card, and I took the blue and white stripes, and I made it go around the painting on a separate piece. That one was made out of wood. The underpiece was canvas. The underpiece was chrysanthemums done willy-nilly. And when I started to paint and I mixed the blue paint, it's the most difficult paint you can do is blue. At least for me it is. You can't really buy your color in a tube. You have to make it because each one is so minutely different. So I was thinking that maybe the paint isn't the right color, the blue. It doesn't look the same as the one that's probably in the woodcut. So I called the Metropolitan, and they gave me the woman who does the print storage place. And I rang her up, and I asked if she had this particular print, because I had never seen it in the Metropolitan. And she said, well, yes, we do have that, but we, for some reason, they don't put it up too delicate. Would it be all right if I came and looked at it? Well, I said, oh, yes, of course, come. And I did, and they gave me these little white cotton gloves to put on, and she actually allowed me to hold it. And I had a sample of the blue that I was using to paint the stripes, and I took it out and I put it, not actually touching, but right next to it, and it was exactly the same color. And I said to myself, this means something. I was beginning to get very superstitious, you know. Now I must do it. And I did, and I did it for almost 20 years, painting this issue of the Japanese using stripes, because nobody knows exactly why. But I did read someplace once it represented the tents that were taken down to the place where generals and other people in the army looked at what was happening on the fields when everybody was killing everybody. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's interesting. So that's how I got to it.
And up until that time, had you been painting in some other style?
Yes, I think you're a general. I was also being taught printmaking by Muhammad Khalil, who has since become a very good friend and sometimes does work for me in printing. I do the what they call the plates, and they're made out of sometimes stainless steel or aluminum. But aluminum is not too good because it gives off a color, which you don't want to happen. And we did a lot of Japanese type prints.
And so you're doing etching, basically?
Etching, yeah. That is a marvelous way to get art. I mean, it's incredible. I also learned how to do woodcuts. And I'm working now on a series of, let's say, the word yes, 100 ways to say yes. And it's about giving back what we take from our world. We have to make it even again. So we have yes, we have give, we have now. There are 100 of each of them, and each 100, each one in the 100 is a different color arrangement. So you have, let's say, a 100 yeses, but each one is different. The same style of the printing, but a different color arrangement for each one. It's been fun. And what I'm hoping for is that somebody will buy it and either give it to a museum or to a hospital.
Now, in your geometric work, you're also printing the components of these pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same technique?
Yes, somewhat the same technique. The ones that you've looked at are etchings, they're not woodcuts. The yes things are woodcuts. But the other ones are various ways of doing etchings. Doing it in acid, which is very dangerous but exciting, particularly if you don't get burnt.
And so this printmaking was something that you developed later in your career?
Yes, much later. But I never actually went to art school because my parents couldn't afford it. And they said, no, you have to learn something that you can make money with.
So you ended up doing something else professionally.
Yes, I went into designing clothing.
Oh, I see. Oh,
yes.
Oh.
And since I wasn't going to make money in doing artwork, but I always worked at home at night for my personal art. But you can make a lot of money doing designing clothing.
Oh, I'm sure. Were you a native New Yorker?
Yes. Yeah, my whole life. I was born in, you know where Baldwin is out on the island?
Yes.
Very small place, near the ocean. And one of my first remembrances is I'm screaming to everybody, there's a fire on the ocean. And they didn't know what I was talking about. What was happening was that there was a boat on fire, but there was another boat that looked like a fire engine. It was all red. And the water was coming out of it and hitting the other boat. How old was I? Maybe four?
So it was a kind of a strong visual stimulation.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm a very visual person.
So you were designing like women's fashion?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you do that?
About 4 years. But then I had to give it up. They were too terrible. I mean, it really is. It's a very nasty business. And I decided I really didn't like that.
And then when did you start coming up to the country?
My husband, Barry, had this house. And before we met, he had this house. And so I went up to the country with him. It was quite a house. I mean, it was dreadful.
It's an early house, right?
I'll say. Yeah, what is it? 1812, as in the overture. And it looked the way the music sound. And it's taken us all this time to fix it up.
And that's how many years now?
45.
45 years?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're practically natives up here.
Yes, we are. And Barry's been very busy almost all the time with helping to keep it native, and so that we don't get these big power lines up there. And he has spent a lot of time doing that.
Now, what part? You're in Greene County, right?
Yes.
And what part of the county?
It's called Cornwallville. It's near Durham, in East Durham. And it's very beautiful. And mountains, valleys. And at one point, somebody came from the electric company. I won't mention the name of the electric company. But they looked at the valley and they said, oh, that would be fantastic to put our big lines in. And we found out about it, and Barry got together with a lot of other people there. And it took 10 years, but we don't have those lines in there now. But all the beautiful places they find. Well, that's because there are no not beautiful places.
I know, it's also beautiful
up here. It's all beautiful, right. It's terrific.
Now, do you work here? Do you have a studio here? Or
I
strictly
have a
in the
studio
city?
Here. But I find that when I come up here, I don't so much lose the inspiration, but I find there's so much to do. You know, there's the garden, and there's this, and there's that. There are people you want to see, your friends. And no, I don't anymore. I tried very hard, but things were not turning out. I'm a city person, and I get inspired every day that I go down to my studio. My studio is in Chelsea.
And where do you live?
We live on the Upper West Side. And when you go down there, I don't know, you get so inspired. I was trying to explain it to someone the other day who was writing a piece about the work. And I said, you know, all of these things that you see, people on the street walking, and maybe there's a woman and her two children, and they're all wearing these magnificent colors, but they don't really go together, because each person is different. But I happen to love them together, so I make a mental note. Sometimes when I go to the studio, I quickly get out my pastels or something and put it on a piece of paper. And then someday you see it in a piece of work. And now I'm working on Antarctica. I said on the other night, and somebody corrected me and say, it's about, it's not on. What can you do? Bad education? No. Interesting speech. So it's mainly about white, as it would be in Antarctica. And you cannot believe how many colors there are in white. There is no such thing as white. It's blue, green, purple, everything, including dark gray. There's a lot of dark gray. But when the sun comes out, that's when you see the turquoise, and it's too marvelous. I tried to do pastels. We were on a boat, but there was no covering for sitting outside, and it was cold. And I thought, you can do this, you know, it's only cold weather. But the wind was blowing, so I'm trying to hold down the paper and the pastels that leave residue was all blowing off. And normally I take that residue and I rub it into the paper, but I didn't have any to rub because it was all blowing off. So I didn't do as many as I had thought I would do.
When was it that you were there?
I would say about 5 years ago. A remarkable place. Remarkable. What do you call it, a satellite that runs around the sky? Well, beyond the sky, has shown that there is a lake under the icebergs in Antarctica. Isn't that amazing?
Amazing.
Now, who knows what's under the lake? Mm-hmm. I would love to go down there and see.
You might be interested. There's a photographer named Carolyn Blackwood.
Yes.
She's done the opposite pole.
Yeah, beautiful work. Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's so unexpected. You can look at photos and you can hear people talk about it, but you go there and it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. It's the color that's unbelievable.
So when you did that, you went to some, you got on a boat somewhere in South America?
Yes.
And what's the boat itself like? I mean,
it's supposed to have been a Russian icebreaker, but it was rough. It was not your dainty little champagne at 4 o'clock kind of ship.
How many passengers were you?
I really don't know, but there were quite a few. Half of them were high school students. So they were like by themselves. You know, this was for most of them, a big gift from their parents through their schools to go. And I wish they were able to talk, but they didn't want to talk to the elderly. So I never found out what they thought about it and how they actually got there. I know they came on the boat, but you know, how and why? That would have been nice to know. Yeah.
And now you're still doing this work.
Yes, I'm doing this work, and it's not white. But what I do now is start with a pastels, and they're rather thick. I don't know, what do you think that dimension is? About 2 inches?
Something like that,
yeah,
two inches.
Thick. And the thing is, it makes a lot of dust. And so every once in a while I have to stop and get the vacuum out and take it all away before it gets into my other paintings where I don't want it. It's nice. I love it. And then once I have the... and there's something else about that, to talk about what is happening there. In each of the paintings, I paint a cave. And the cave is showing grass and things like that, but actually more like blue water. When water is on land, very often it looks blue. And I have that coming and melting out. It forms a cave. And then after we went to Antarctica, we went to India, northern India. And I took photographs from that, which is very full of green trees and animals and so forth. And I put that photograph into the cave so that you see that. The icebergs are melting, maybe. And this is what could happen again, because it already happened once, maybe twice, maybe forever. Just keeps going around. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. Someone asked me a question just last week about the colors. Now, first I'm going to tell you a story about a lecture I gave to my granddaughter's art class. Actually, it was three different art classes all together. And I don't know how old fifth graders are, but they were in the fifth grade. And there was this little boy sitting in front of me, and he was wiggling around, and I was talking, and he was living, you know, like he couldn't wait for it to end or something. And finally I ended it. And I said, does anybody have any questions? And this little boy leaped up out of his chair, and he's waving his hand, and even though he was right in front of me. He said, I do, I do. I said, well, what would you like to know? He said, I want to know why you have so many colors in your head. And I said, oh, good gracious, how am I going to answer this? And I said, well, I think they were born there. And so when I need a color, I look inside my head, and there it is. And so I get it out in some form of oil paintings or pastels or watercolors, and I use it for what I need. I don't know if I put it back or not. And he was so happy. Oh my goodness, I said the right thing. That it lives up there. Everything does, you know, for everybody. And if you're lucky, you can find it and reach it and use it. So that's what I do primarily. I make notes.
So you'll in other words, put down some colors.
Sometimes it's just colors. Sometimes it's a sketch using ink and with colors next to it. Sometimes it's even a pattern of you see how many different patterns there are in the work. Sometimes that. But the patterns are the same way. They're inside my head. And otherwise, I don't know how I would find so many. Now, where would you look?
These do have a Japanese look about them, actually.
Yes, I also collected for many years Japanese. Do you know what Sears and Roebuck catalogs are?
Oh, sure.
Yes, sort of like that. For people, and most of the people lived out of the big cities early on, and so these books were made for these people, and a man would go out with this catalog with garments in them or patterns for yard goods, and people would pick them out, women would pick them out, and they could pick the colors too. So there were drawings of the colors as well. But those had pretty much faded out, so I wasn't able to actually use those in any way. But it gave me many good ideas, and I liked the idea that a woman could put together her own garment. You know, what you're doing is buying yardage, and it's all straight pieces, and you sew them. Not too differently than that. There are no triangles. They're just straight rectangles. And they put them together, and that's how you get that marvelously graceful sleeve.
Oh, right, because it's kind of a square.
That's right. It's like a T-square. So that's how I get those things. Now they just seem to come to me. I don't dream about them, though. No. Never once have I dreamed about a painting.
So you have you've traveled in Japan also.
Yes. We've been there about three times. The last time it was in depth, so we went to a number of cities and looked at lots of gorgeous things. I bought a lot of fabric.
Oh, yes, oh, yes.
Yeah, never did anything with it. So.
I have a sort of a swatch book of, it's called Stripe Lattice and Ikat in Edo period.
Oh, really?
Hundreds of...
Wow.
There was a wonderful Japanese bookstore on Fifth Avenue and 42nd
yes.
Street.
Yes,
came from there.
Yeah. Oh, that hasn't been there in a long time.
Yeah, this goes back 20 years or something, yeah, probably.
There was also one in the... I want to call it the arcade, but that's not what it's called. Rockefeller Center. Right, there was a Japanese shop there of books. And some... small amount of little tchotchkes. And I loved that bookshop. I went in there all the time.
There was also that wonderful store.
Takashimaya.
Takashimaya.
Oh, I was really angry when they closed. You know, I thought to myself, if they had only listened to me, they'd still be open. But they had on the first floor the most gorgeous flowers.
Oh, fantastic flowers.
And
I
then,
know, yes.
Oh, they went on other marvelous things made in Japan, just gorgeous. And then they changed it. They put the flowers on the fifth floor.
I remember that also, yes.
And now people just went by. They didn't stop and look at the gorgeous flowers and then walk in and get waylaid up to the fourth floor where they had wonderful clothing and other wonderful things.
Noguchi lamps.
Yes.
All sorts of things.
Yeah. Beautiful. Just beautiful. Ah. See if they had listened to me.
I knew someone in the fashion business, and when they sent flowers, they had to come from there.
Yes. Me too. For years I did it. And now there's nothing that quite compares to it, because it's the pairing up of the flowers in a special traditional Japanese way. You can't use flowers that are not in season if you're doing a proper thing. So But now that flowers come from all over the world, I wonder what that means. Can you use them or not? But I liked it the other way, where you used what was available in your neighborhood, as it were. That's how I got to Japan, going to China.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, oh. We went, the first one was right after the President Nixon came back, and he sort of opened it up, and we were the second group of people to go, Barry and I. I mean, they weren't all our friends, but we did go, and it was just absolutely fascinating. People frozen in time, and they were amazed at what they saw, and we were amazed at what we saw. It was just a fabulous trip, and we went again a second time, which each time you had to stop in Japan in order to get the Chinese plane to go, because other planes were not allowed in. Just so remarkable. Everybody was wearing exactly the same thing. Everybody.
That was the age of the Mao jacket?
Yes. And now we haven't been back since then to China. I can't imagine what it's like where everybody is dressed differently. And how has it changed their thinking? I wondered about that.
I always thought it'd be great to live in a society where everybody wore the same thing.
It's so easy.
So easy.
You can, yes, but then if you do that, does that mean you think alike about other things, like art? Everybody has to do the same thing?
No, but in the late 70s, 80s, all the artists were black head to toe. Remember that? Downtown?
Yes. Yes. Some of them still are.
Some of them still are, as a matter of fact, yeah.
I see them when they pass my studio. Oh, amazing. When the second time we went to China was with a group that was connected with the China Institute in Manhattan. And you had to fill out this questionnaire about what you did, where you lived, you know, what neighborhood, all kinds of things like that. And so when I got there, the person who was taking us around, the leader, and we were a small group, came to me and she said, I understand that you are an artist. And I said, yes, I am. And she said, we would like you to look at etchings that were done by our school people. And we want to know if it would be saleable in New York. I said, I don't think I can do that. She said, oh, no, you have to. You've told them already that you would. The stack was this high.
A foot high.
And oh, I forgot, yes, we're on. I have to say what it is. It was almost a foot high. And I looked at each one very carefully, and they were stunning, absolutely stunning for people who had not done art in some 40 years. They had used any number of material, different ways of doing an etching. There are maybe dozens of ways you can do it to finally get it on paper. And but all of them were practically the same. You know, talking about the dressing and does it affect your life? I think it does. And there was always people marching up a mountain with a red flag. Maybe done differently here or there, and but it was the same essentially. And at the end of it all, the woman who was running the school said to me, "So what did I think?" I said, "Well, it's stunning. I mean, how can it not be? It's so technically perfect." She said, "Yes, but would we be able to sell it there?" And I said, "I don't think so, if you want me to be honest with you. I don't think so. Because you all have only one theme. And in order to sell something, it has to be diverse. You have to show the other parts of China." And after I said that, I realized, well, no other parts. So she said, "I will talk to the committee about that." And sure enough, there was a man who wrote to me, an artist, and he sent me some of his work, which I don't know, they must have allowed him to do it. And he sent it. There was no little red flag. There was no climbing the mountain. It was just a simple scene, you know, of beautiful trees and maybe some animals. And I thought to myself, they're quick learners, very quick. But it also made me happy, because everybody doing the same thing doesn't make you happy. It doesn't mean you're as good as the other person. It means you're all copying. So that means that maybe they were actually learning new things.
Now they seem to have developed a big art scene in China.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, they're just amazing, amazing art. So, and I think I find that some of our artists are copying them. You know, it's been so popular and so effective in sales, the Chinese art, that some artists that maybe are not so good here are using that. I don't know. I haven't asked anyone. As an artist, the one thing you must have above everything else, you must have people who believe in you. And I have that. I have any number of people who believe in me. And whether or not they like the work, they don't say. But they say it's good. It's excellent. And I can't hear enough of that. But that, I think for young artists, they should not lose hope. Because even if you have to take a day job, you can work at night. You know, there's all kinds of lighting you can have. It's not expensive. And it gives you almost daylight. So it's best to get it done when you can. And don't worry about it. It's at night and blah, blah, blah. You need money to be able to do it. You know, and maybe you don't have parents that can support you, or a spouse, or anything like that. So you have to do it yourself.
Now, how long have you had your studio in Chelsea?
Oh, let's see, it's almost 20 years. I had a place up on 91st and East End Avenue. I think it's called East End, near the river. And that was lovely. But through some difficulties with the board there, they wouldn't allow me to enlarge my space, although I could, and it wouldn't have hurt anything or anybody. I was able to find a place. I sold the other one, and that paid for the new place, which was three times bigger than the old place. So that was good.
And it sounded like you're on street level or near street level?
No, second floor.
Second floor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the time I got there, the first street floor was taken, which is better. The second floor is better. The light is wonderful. So a north light, like somebody had written, what you need as an artist, you need space. You need places to hang your work. You need north light. Wow, look at all the north light I have. So that was very good. I'm having a terrible time with my memory these days. Yes, I fell a year ago.
Oh.
And I broke a number of things and had various operations and... but as you can see, I'm getting along. I never thought it would take so long, though. and my daughter-in-law, Georgiane, who is also an artist, when I was complaining, she said, "No, take it easy. It's going to be at least a year, maybe more." I said, "No, come on. Look at me, I'm almost finished." She said, "We'll see." So here I am, limping along.
Well, I hope I can make it over to Springfield to see the show.
I hope so, too. I don't even know how far away that is.
It's about an hour from here.
Yes, but that's a long time to be in the car.
It's kind of a long time to be in the car. But it's a long time since I went to the museum in Hartford, Wadsworth, which is such a wonderful museum.
I haven't been there.
Oh, you haven't? Oh,
No, it's
a fantastic, one of the great museums of the world, I think, probably.
Mm.
So maybe it would be possible to, you know, sort of do a trip to that area.
Yeah, actually that would be a good idea, wouldn't it? To go, I'll go and look at my work, of course, and the origami, which I think it's such a marvelous thing to master. But I have made a date, January 1st, that I'm going to go back to the studio. I've been going, but I'm not doing anything except writing checks to people who want them, like the management, the electric company, the gas company. But I'm actually going to take... I've been practicing with my hand, and so I can almost get it all the way over. A little more. And then we go finish my Antarctica.
Well, it sounds fascinating.
You know what's fascinating? I was walking with my husband on Madison Avenue, and we passed a framing shop. And I wasn't going to stop and look in there because I have a framer that does everything. But I walked past, and then I walked backwards, back again, because I didn't believe what I had seen, which was... plastic framing, frosted, so that it looked like ice. And I said, "Barry, come here. What does that look like to you?" He said, "A frame." I said, "What kind of a frame?" He said, "It looks like ice." I said, "That's what I'm going to get for my thing." So I went in and I asked him for a small piece of framing that he had. And I took it back to the studio. It's so perfect.
Wonderful.
Like they say, it was made for the painting. Just so beautiful. But heavy, very heavy. When I get those on the paintings, I can't lift the paintings. And this is the first time I framed something before it was finished. But I learned something, too, is that you really know you're not finished.
because it
shows it up. It's so amazing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, sometimes maybe you could just say, "Oh, it's fine." Yeah. Not when you put the frame on. At least it's framing. Yeah, so I'm very anxious to get to the studio and do actual work.
Well, I hope it happens soon.
It will, January 1.
January 1. Thank you very much for coming, Gloria.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been actually an interesting and nice experience.
Great.
As I told you, how afraid I am of things like that, being a microphone.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.